This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We are back after only a few days, and that can only mean one thing. My name is Strigger, I'm your host, and with me, as always, Dylan Fox. Dylan, this is G1 Climax.
Another big show for the Eastern Lariat? That's even bigger than the G1, in my book. Maybe I'm biased. Since maybe. I am on the show, maybe you could claim that. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying, to me, this is what feels like a championship run right now. Where's our title belt? I think we need some titles. You know, I think we need some championships, whatever you want to call them. I think we need to get them. We need some trophies as well. Bring back the trophies. And I always say that. Bring back the big checks. Bring back the trophies, not just for us. Give them to everybody. I don't even think it should be just for the winner. I think it should be on every single match. That you should have a big check and a trophy given to the winner. Let's give these matches some prestige, especially this mid-tour form. You get in the middle of the tournament, night 6-7. You know, we've heard it before. We've seen it many, many years. We're getting to the point now where people are going to start saying, you know, we've watched a lot of wrestling over this last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And to make it more important and more special and more exciting, bring back the trophies. That's my answer, and that's what we need.
Do you think the winner of Bad Luck Fale versus Toru Yano deserves a trophy?
Maybe you could give them one of the smaller trophies. I didn't say all the trophies need to be equal. I just said bring the trophies yes. out. I'm not discriminating against anybody. I don't care who it is. It could be the greatest, the worst, the least successful, or the biggest upset. It could be anything. Everybody deserves a trophy. This is like trophy freedom I'm on about right now. I give it to everybody. You know, I know a lot of people. Well, you have to win, though. You can't give it to everybody. You got to make it. You got to make the matches matter. Okay. Maybe at the end of the tournament, we could give Yano a trophy if you want. It could be something. You know, a lot of times, you know, like in the Stardom tournaments, they'll have an award type of ceremony after the tournament, like, you know, best match and. Mm-hmm. You know, heart most, you know, the one with the most heart, or, you know, like that kind of thing. I think we could come up with some awards for G1, which I tend to do anyway at the end of the tournaments. I will have my own G1 call outs, you know, for that. But I don't have a trophy, unfortunately. So if I had a trophy, I'd give it to the winners, but I can't. So it's up to New Japan. It's up to Bushiroad. They've got the investors. They've got the big money. They need to come forward and bring the trophy out for all of the winners of the awards, if not all the matches. But I know maybe some people might think that's a little overkill, but give them to the award winners at the end of the tournament, at least.
I guess for the past 17 or 18 years, however long it has been, Toru Yano, in retrospective, deserves the trophy for biggest buffoonery, I would say, this year as well, already.
That could definitely be something you could go with. But we've had some contenders over the years. We had, like, the Tama Tonga run, you know, where things went crazy, evil. You know, so it's not just Yano. We've got a lot of goofballs right now in Japanese wrestling, and particularly New Japan. So we could go back and look at that. Izuka was in the tournament. Hideo Saito, if you want to go. You know, we've got some crazy people in this tournament over the years. So we have to think big. There's a lot of nominees. And now this year we can get it on with all of the awards, if you want to even make up some like you just did there.
Yeah, I'm very good at making those up, I guess. So biggest buffoonery sorted. Maybe I'm going to think of some other trophies here on this show, because I don't know about you, Dylan. I really, really thought that these two shows over-delivered, considering what we said about them on our last show we did. These cards, there was one promising match on each card, but I thought that the overall level of the shows was pretty good.
About G1, you would say? You think the shows were good? Pretty good?
We can dive into this here. Like Chase Owens and Grado Khan, they have a rating of 5.60, and that is around the mark that these matches in the mid card had on prior G1 shows, on prior G1 runs in the last couple of years. And I thought that Chase Owens and Grado Khan, they had pretty good chemistry with one another. Chase Owens, I thought, did a good job for bringing it to the Grado Khan. I think he worked hard. Grado Khan also looked good in this match, and I couldn't complain about this one.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I said at the end of the last episode, I think the tournament's been pretty entertaining and good so far. And you see a match like that, and, you know, Okan, he's going to be an interesting guy to watch in the tournament.
Yeah.
Just through motivation level. I said it on the last episode. Owens is not a great wrestler, but he will always try hard. And I think that's why he has respect from the office and stuff, and they keep putting him in these positions. I know a lot of fans aren't super into that, but I do think that they see that in him. The office does. And Okan, you know, he's at a spot now. He's still pretty young in the grand scheme of things. I think a lot of people would like him to get a big run in the G1. But I, you know, this match in particular, you know, like you said, that was a fine match. It wasn't anything that's going to, like, rock the world or anything, but it was a good, solid match, you know, that 3-star type of level. Yes. Like, you know, 6 out of 10. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that, especially in the opener, especially with Okan and Chase Owens. That's good for what you would expect from those two. And we're seeing people. I think that is something we're seeing up and down the cards, and we'll talk more about some other guys in a little bit, but we're seeing good effort up and down the board. I think we're seeing a really strong effort from pretty much all of the performers, you know, in a lot of the ways we're going. Like I said, I mentioned in the last episode, Naito, he never quite hit that big gear, but I think that was a story purpose behind that. And I think otherwise, I mean, you look up and down, you see a Chase and Okan, that's not exactly a marquee match, but look at the effort they put in, and they gave away a pretty good match. And in the end, interesting that Chase got the win over Okan. You know, he's one of those guys, again, I think a lot of people really have a lot of high hopes for. And he's going to be very interesting to watch because he is their hope in terms of a younger talent, somebody new, somebody fresh. He's the one that you could point to that has a real shot at it. But, you look at a match like this and you think, well, maybe there's a reason he wasn't wrestling on that final night at the end of the day. And, or, you know, same thing with you know, another match we'll talk about where it seems like maybe this might not be his year. Maybe he'll have a big run at the end of the day. You never know. But it's going to be interesting to see his effort and how they handle this guy, because he is the one that you look to for a new talent to Jet Ford.
Yes, I would completely agree with all of what you just said. I'm just looking at the schedule for him. This was his first G1 match in this year. He still has Zanada, Ishii, Jay White, and Tama Tonga and Taichi left. So I'm not very hopeful that this will be a big run at the end of the gate. But I can see him like picking up two wins here. On English commentary, they talked about both of them being former tag team champions, positioning themselves to maybe challenge FTR for the IWGP tag team title. And I gotta say, I mean, nothing against the two, but I'm really not thinking FTR territory when I'm thinking about Grado Khan and Chase Owens right now.
No, I would definitely not say that. By the way, check out the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Check out the written review. It's not even audio. I wrote a whole article on Death Before Dishonor, Ring of Honor. FTR was in the main event of that. Since we talked about them, we brought them up, a good transition. And I had a lot to say about that show in general. A very strong show for the overall. But,
yes,
you know, like definitely not. You know, like you said, definitely there's levels to this, and I would not put these two on their level. But still, you know, they did feud over the titles. They did the Chase and the Fale versus the Khan on the Cobb, as Classic Catch said on the award show. We got a shout out there, but we have to remember that, you know, the tag team titles really don't mean anything in New Japan.
I mean, they mean something now because FTR have them and two others.
Yeah, see, even then, it's like they're one of a set, and they, like, they're a, like, the total definition of a prop, Like, there's no prestige to winning the titles, really, other than, like you said, a great team that everyone... It's like, you know, Omega having the Impact title. It's not like that elevated the prestige of the title. It's just he having, yeah, you know, a star happened to have it. That's what we have with that. They still don't mean anything, I would say. And if they go back to New Japan, they will not be any better for it. I do not think they will ever care about the tag division under the current, you know, regime, so to speak. But Okan... His future will always be as a singles guy, or at least we hope it will. He's got an interesting style, an interesting gimmick, you know, and a lot of people have varying opinions on him, but he's a guy that's definitely gotten over to the fans and somebody that you would like to see.
Yes. So that was the first G1 match of that double shot in Curacao. By the way, they did 1,312 fans for the first one, and on today's show, they did 1,323, so all very much in the same range here. I don't know. I would expect a G1 show in the summer right now to do better, but we've seen it on the first two shows from Hokkaido that they also had much less fans there in attendance, and in comparison to that, this looked like a much more packed venue. So I guess it's an all right draw for G1 Climax.
Yeah, you know, we have to take into account the social status, as always, with the pandemic and stuff wreaking some havoc right now in Japan.
Yeah.
Who knows what kind of impact that could have had. Definitely just among the mental state of the people wanting to go out to the shows. That's something we can't really say. But overall, I mean, it definitely wasn't like watching it and it was like, oh, this sad, you know, situation or anything. It was like a normal venue pretty much for the G1, especially a mid-tour on top of it. Again, we're in night 6 and 7, not exactly the most prestigious nights, I would say. Although, by the end of this show, they felt like they were making a pretty big impact on things. So, the crowd was good for me. Nothing too spectacular. But, it is what it is right now for a mid-tour show.
On the topic of buffoonery, Dylan, on the level of 1 to 10 for the biggest buffoonery, what rating would you give Evil and Kenta for their match?
I think you'd have to be an obvious 10. But on the other hand, I do, the wrestler in me appreciates Kenta's shameless plugging of his gimmick. So,
true worker.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've seen it in the backstage interviews, like with the book, very funny. And even in this match, his weapon of choice is grabbing his own autobiography to use as a weapon. So for
which
that,
is sold out everywhere. So you can't buy it right now.
Look at that. And look, see, it's worked. His style has worked completely. But more than anything, I think we have to bump it back up for a 10 because out of all the times, this guy can't get a win on the day his autobiography drops. Like, he had to lose this? Come on! Give the man a win when a biography is dropping, man. That's simple. You know, that should be easy as pie. But instead, they went against it. They had to put him under. That's not good business, New Japan. But, I mean, it worked out because of his efforts. But I would have liked to have seen, just on principle, I'm very unhappy that Kenta lost when his biography dropped. And I think that the day of his autobiography dropping, they need to protect him. They need to protect the book. They need to protect the fans that want to read his book. They need to give people going into that autobiography on a high, not going in on, oh, he just lost in this really terrible match. No, he didn't say he needs to win in this really terrible match. Now look how happy I am. I'm reading his book. I'm reading his career. I'm reading the dirt he might have on his stories. Who knows what he said in that book? I haven't read it. I can't read Japanese, Striga, so I can't read this book right now. So it means nothing to me as an English-speaking fan. But I do appreciate it on principle. And I appreciate on principle if he would have won, which they did not do, and therefore I'm very unhappy. Therefore, I give this match a 0 out of 10.
Cage match, we have a 3.75. I don't know if I'm going soft, Dylan. I'm not going to say that I love this match, but I didn't actively hate it. This is the territory where I can completely tolerate the House of Torture act, where they did everything that the House of Torture stands for. They did all the shenanigans, including Sho at his new job. I think it's like being a wrestler is now his side job. I think he now works in Currican Hall. I think he now is the guy who switches on and off the light in Kirk and Hall all the time. I think that's his job right now. Big upgrade for him compared to being a very hopeful young junior heavyweight talent in Roppongi 3K. Very good. But this is like where I can tolerate the act because it doesn't like hurt anything on the card. It doesn't hurt the top of the card. It's not about any titles. It's just about the House of Torture doing their shtick to one another, basically. And I got some laughs out of it, especially with Kenta and his book. And in the end, when he pulled out Dick Togo from underneath the ring. But yeah, this is what you get with the House of Torture, and it's their complete act. Basically, you don't have to watch anything else of the House of Torture. You get the complete act within 10 minutes. So very convenient, actually.
I don't know
what to say.
Yeah.
Talked so much about anything else about the match that you just said, that's terrible. Let's go.
It's just I would not mind this if it were in the undercard, just not in the tournament. Like I think we've said this. I've said this many times about Yano. It's like ostensibly this is a tournament for the world title and Made of Any Wrestler Kingdom. And when they did this finish the first time against Goto, I thought it was mind-bogglingly stupid. And I think that was at the New Japan Cup that they did it. Here, I mean, the whole match was terrible, so it's not like we lost anything. And, I mean, it's evil, so you're not going to get a good match if everything was straight. But, you know, and Kenta, we're coming off the great match he had with Zach. You know, it's not what I would have wanted to see, to be honest with you. But if you're into it, I could see that they did so much that it at least might have drifted into that so bad it's good territory rather than it just being bad. But I like for a tournament, this is way too much, like for me. Like, I would rather it be in the undercard, and I think I'd be okay with it.
Let's see about the next match. This is a rating of 6.45. Lance Archer picking up 2 points, beat Tom Lawler, was accompanied to the ring by Royce Isaacs, who also was part of a spot with the Lance Archer choke slamming Tom Lawler off the apron. What did you think about this match?
I like this match. I thought it was really good. In fact, I think Tom, he made a great debut, you know, really getting the crowd really into his character. He's been doing it in the undercards throughout so far, and it's continued to work. I think he's a guy that definitely, and you look at him, you see him on Strong. You see him even before he came into wrestling. He was a huge fan when he was still like an MMA dude. Like, he was a huge wrestling fan and had all of those tropes. But you see him in New Japan. And now you could tell this is like his dream. He's so passionate about it, and he's so charismatic that he gets the fans really rallying behind him. And I really liked Archer's performance here. He must be a listener because we saw a lot more of him wreaking havoc and being a badass big guy than like and stuff, which I was very happy to see. It felt like I was being listened to, and it's very nice when that happens. But I think it was I was right. It was for the better of the match. He was doing some all kinds of cool stuff with a choke slam. He had that big pounce in the corner. That was good. Like, he has a lot of great moves. Like I said, he's a great big man. Like, he's another one, super charismatic, like, has a lot of great stuff to him. So I really liked it. I thought this was a really good match, actually.
Yeah, there's a big size and weight difference between the two. I really can agree with what you said, and I really like the approach they took with Lance Archer, as you said, being the power guy in this match. Tom Lawler always tried to chop the guy down. But like I said on Twitter, sometimes power wins over technique. And this was the tale of power just being too much for Tom Lawler in his first G1 outing. You gotta say, Lance Archer is a veteran of this stuff. I mean, he's been in the G1 climax so often. Lawler, he just, as you said, was on the undercards, is over. And that's what I said very early in the tournament after I saw his first match. He was in the first actual match of this tour against, it was Oiwa or Fujita, I'm not sure. And I thought that his act will get over very, very quickly, and we can see it right here. So he tried to use his technique, which got the crowd going as well. Lance Archer's power was just too much at this point, but maybe Lawler can bounce back and get another win. We'll see about that, but definitely a good showing for his first G1 match.
And that means more than wins and losses for someone like him. Like, right. he needs great performances and reason and getting over with the crowd and reason to be brought back, ultimately. That is his goal as not just a character, but obviously in real life as well. So I think that they worked it very well, and to both men's strengths, I really liked it. I thought it was a good match, honestly.
Yeah, on the topic. Definitely recommended. On the topic of reasons to be brought back, Royce Isaacs, of course, is on this tour here. I watched his match with Tom Lawler on the undercard today against Kenta and El Fantasmo. It's nice that they already introduce him to the crowds, because you can definitely tell that he is someone that they also would want to bring back with his regular tag team partner, Jorel Nelson of the West Coast Wrecking Crew. That will be a team that could also be a very overact when World Tag League comes around.
We're seeing them mix in some of the strong guys with him, Bad Dude Tito on the undercard. Mm-hmm. You know, they're bringing in, so they're making room for them, which is a nice effort. Again, it's not like it's that they're overbearing by any means, but with these guys on the tour with Jonah and Filthy Tom, they're making room for some other acts, and I think that's a very good move overall. It helps Strong look better as well when you have guys that are in bigger positions, because I think Strong doesn't have a lot of momentum in terms of a fan base in America. But Rome wasn't built in a day. You have to build this up through time, and having stuff like this will definitely help a Filthy Tom and a Jonah on the tour, and you see they're buddies on there as well. It makes things look a little bit more fleshed out. You can get attached to these characters if you choose to watch them. So yeah, good things all around for them.
And then we had David Finlay and Juice Robinson in the main event of Curricane Hall. And we just said on our last show that these two probably won't deliver a great main event, because their start in the G1 was very mediocre, to say the least. And they went out there to have a proper grudge match. Sometimes grudge matches get this label and they are just normal wrestling matches, but not this one. This one was a true grudge match, and it's completely, from the first moment until the final pinfall, grabbed me emotionally. And it had levels to it of grabbing you emotionally. First, the first part of this match was about showing that these two are serious and these two really want to hurt one another when they were brawling on the outside and smashing each other in the guardrails. And it grew and grew over time. And one of the greatest moments in this match, and this probably will be remembered for a long time, when Juice Robinson was begging David Finlay to not hurt his hand, because this was his hand that he broke a couple of years ago in the G1 Climax, when these two were still tag team partners and when they were still friends. But now they aren't friends anymore. Probably in a match that these two would have had, Dylan, when they were still friendly, I don't think that David Finlay would have gone to this tactics. But here now, he knew that Juice Robinson would do everything that he had to beat him. So David Finlay, he went and did the same. And he smashed Juice Robinson's hand all over the place, which in the end led to Juice having to use his other hand. And David Finlay had an advantage here over him. And then another great moment, he practically had him beat, but he pulled him up again because he wanted to really, really defeat the guy. Also kicked out of the Pulp Friction. And also David Finlay got a great, no, Juice Robinson got a great kick out. He got his legs on the ropes from, I think it was the Prima Nocta. But definitely what I can say about this match is that this one, maybe my favorite match of the tournament so far, definitely very high on my top three. Just loved it from the get-go.
Yeah, this match, like, this had the story that a lot of these other great matches might not have had as much going into it. But it's interesting because that story was completely, it was so impressive on both of their parts that the story was completely told through them. They're really, it's not like, you know, this turn happened basically off camera, where Juice suddenly shows up as a Bullet Club guy. It's not like he turned on Finlay at the end of the day in terms of a New Japan audience. Maybe they did something at Impact I'm not aware of, but nobody cares about that, to be honest.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if they did, it wouldn't even matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, this story has not been told effectively when it comes to the company, but they were so great in their performance that they ended up making it work anyway. And they got every emotion that you want to get across. They got it across just through their actions in this one match. And that shows you how great this performance was for both men. I totally agree with you. This is absolutely one of the best matches of the tournament. Like I said, it has a story to it in a way. You know, even something like in Ishii and Taichi, that they've wrestled before, but that's not. It's not like there's a story behind that other than just an in-ring deal, pretty much. Like, this is a real turn and a friendship that got broken up. And they portrayed that in their matches so much, and it really worked so much to their advantage. I was so impressed with both men here from the emotional aspect. Finlay's somebody that I always have thought was underrated historically in terms of just a purely a wrestler. I remember when they had their tag league run, and he won, and I was like, man, this guy's so good. And he turned a lot of heads in that tournament. And again, it's like similar to when Yoshihashi had that big G1 a few years ago, where he did great, but then everybody just kind of forgot about it immediately, like because they didn't really do anything with it, to be honest. But he was so good then, and now we come here to this point, and the opening match, you hear all the talk was like, oh, Finlay, he's not good. He doesn't deserve to be G1 because he had this really bad match with Yujiro in the House of Torture. Like, it was totally his fault. It had nothing to do with, yeah, well, we know, whatever, at the end of the day.
Yeah, but match with Yujiro. Amazing.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's all the talk. Like, was like, oh, he really let us all down. Like, and it wasn't even a bad match. It was a good match until the House of Torture stuff started. Like, but people will see what they want to see sometimes, it seems like. But Juice, he's another one. He had every reason to have a good match, and it just didn't work against Shingo. And I think he was very motivated as well. And debuting a big gimmick, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, Finlay got the win here, and that was great. But every intent they've shown has been more towards Juice so far. So I was very surprised by the win. I think the fans were surprised. They really got into this match. Again, these guys haven't been around forever, like in New Japan, and weren't exactly super pushed acts even before then. So it's interesting that the crowd was so into this. And like I said, I think you have to credit the wrestlers more than anything else. And it shows you how impressive this performance was. You know, as a match, it's right up there. Have no problem with saying it's the best of the whole tournament, actually. I for me, it would have to be up there as well. Again, top three, top five match. And it had the story that some of the other ones didn't have. So for me, that's great. But also, I think in terms of performances, these were definitely the ones that I was the most impressed by. Never mind the match itself, but just the performances from the two men I thought were so amazing. They milked it to incredible drama at the end. Never mind the stuff with the hand, but like you said, there were kickouts of big moves. You know, he was using the Trash Panda move, which is kind of like his brain buster into the knee, pretty much type of deal. You have the Prima Nocta, like the Dudley Dog type of deal. You know, you have a lot of good stuff with him. Juice unloaded his full arsenal, and it was just a great match. Like, very, very well-deserved main event for both men, and a total triumph in terms of in-ring storytelling that I was so appreciative of.
Definitely deserves a big-ass trophy for this one. So,
Eddie stole the title at the end.
Yes. is he in a while? He can really be the linear champion, because Juice Robinson, like, he wasn't even the champion to begin with, but he is in possession of the belt. And Dylan, is it stealing when you take something that is not in the possession originally of the guy you stole it from? Is it stealing?
Some would say there's honor among thieves. Sly Cooper taught us this, but I think that this was a thief in time right now with him dragging that belt away from that. This was justice. Juice did not deserve that title. He did not beat Ospreay. Ospreay was the true champion, and now Finlay has enacted justice by grabbing his title and challenging Ospreay to a match now. So this was so silly that but I it was comedy done right to me, in my opinion. Like, this title is so absurd when you think about it. Like, imagine this happening in a UFC, like a guy stealing a title or something like that. You know, that would never happen in reality. But it's entertaining, it's fun. It gives these guys, again, where would they be without making their own storylines at the end of the day? You know, Finlay has not been pushed at all. But now you've created something with this big win. They've given him a huge win in the main event. He's taken the title. And now he has his own angle that he's running. And I think that's great. So you see that. Where are they going to go with it? How is this going to play out with the foreigners? You know, Juice and Finlay and Osprey. How are they going to do that? Maybe Phantasmo could get in there at some point, you know, at the end of the tournament, because he's, you know, he's lost some things recently. And I think he's to replace it, unfortunately. So, you know, that it's going to be interesting to see how they turn this out.
Definitely, like, want a side YouTube story of El Phantasmo and Peter breaking up after one day.
This seems like one of my relationships.
Oh, wow.
You know, like I said, you know, everything looks great early on, but then she realized that he didn't have what it takes at the end of the day. And we talked about it on the last show. Did we not say that? We did not see him as an idol style of
wrestler. No.
So it appears that logic may have won out in the New Japan.
Is Yujiro an idol style of wrestler? That's the question.
That's a great point as well, to be honest with you. If anything, he's gotten in worse shape a lot over the years.
Doesn't sound like an idol, actually.
No, and I mean, he's a sleazy guy. We saw Phantasmo was honorable in his match. You know, like I said, why do we have to judge people by their looks right now? We need to judge by their actions.
It's true. So let's judge by the actions. David Finlay stole or took, let's say he took the IWGP US Championship. I think that pretty much means he is winning against Shingo Takagi, because otherwise Shingo Takagi would be the next linear champion for the title.
Okay.
Since this match against Takagi is happening on the 30th, and the next match for Finlay is against Ospreay after that on August 2nd. So Ospreay could regain his championship there.
That could be the moment when we see Ospreay come full circle with the title. I think it's interesting now, this kind of throws the ending in flux, too. With
exactly, yes. Like, because Juice could beat him and just win or take it back.
Or he could lose and Ospreay gets it back. You know, either way good. You know, so how are they going to handle this storyline? And I think they deserve some credit, because this title really isn't that meaningful in the grand scheme of things or prestigious. But they're making something interesting out of it with what they're doing. So I have to praise them for that, and I appreciate that going forward. And I hope they continue and keep up this storyline and this craziness that they're starting.
Yes, so this was the first of the two shows in Curtain Hall. The next one was earlier today. There are no cage match ratings as of yet, because we are recording this right after the show happened. Yes, we got a card with, once again, 4 G1 Climax matches. I watched some of the undercard. Like I just said, I watched the Kenta and Phantasm versus Lawler and Isaacs match, which was pretty good, I thought. Also, Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan versus Jonah and Badu Tito, I thought was good. Jeff Cobb and Jonah did some great running into one another, like the big colossus that they are. So that was cool for 5 minutes. I didn't watch the others, and then dove into the G1 Climax matches, which started out with Will Ospreay defeating Yujiro Takahashi. Thought this was a much better match for Yujiro in comparison to the David Finlay match, but much like you said, the match wasn't bad to begin with. This one just didn't have any shenanigans. So we can maybe pinpoint it down. Whenever Yujiro is wrestling straight, he's losing.
Wow, you may have uncracked the code, Stringer.
Ooh.
Right now, the Yujiro code has been cracked on this
very
show.
Mysterious.
Exactly. Now, this is bigger than the Da Vinci Code, in my opinion. You know, that one, it had a pretty obvious thing they were going with the religious overtones at the end. This Yujiro thing, you don't know where it's going to go, but you have figured it out somehow, and I think that you need to get a trophy for this now.
Thank you.
And
that's what brought Peter back. Maybe the mythical undertone of the Yujiro code.
Now I didn't sense any mythology in what you were saying about him wrestling and losing or not, but maybe there is. Maybe you know more than you're letting on right now. What are you trying to hide from us, Stringer?
I'm just thinking about Yujiro right now.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, Yujiro, more than losing or winning or whatever, I thought this was a pretty good match, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I didn't think this was a bad match at all. You know, just like with the Phantasmo thing. I mean, now, to be fair, he did lose even when they tried to cheat with Sho, you know, in the last match. So maybe he's just going to lose no matter what. Is actually the real code being broken.
We'll see about that. We'll see when Sho comes again and switches up the lights. We'll see about that.
That was for Evil. He doesn't do that for Yujiro. Like, Evil is the one with the light switch. We cannot have gimmick infringement in the House of Torture. So, you know, Yujiro, he's in trouble right now. But I thought the match was good. We even saw Yujiro shockingly break out a satellite version of his pimp juice.
I thought that was so funny because that it was basically Will Ospreay satellite DDTing himself.
Well, yes, that's obvious, but I appreciate the guts to even try such a yes. nonsensical. I appreciate that he's trying to do different things at least in the tournament. Yeah. Like, I think, in all seriousness, I think that's worthy of praise, even his athletic ability or whatever. But you know, Ospreay worked very hard. Again, he's another one. You know, whatever you want to say about him, he always gives effort in his matches, and I think that this combination ended up making the match work overall, and I think that it was a pretty good match. Again, much like the Chase and Okan match, it's not something that I'm, you know, telling people to, you know, run, you know, just break out of your work or your shopping trip or wherever you're at, just rush home to watch this. Like, no, it's not that great.
Definitely one of the better Yujiro matches.
Yeah, and I thought both of the last two were pretty good. Like, you know, I they were up there, they were as good or better than pretty much all of his matches last year, I would say, in the tournament. So I think that's good for Yujiro.
Yeah.
And Ospreay as well.
I think Ospreay did a great job here. Just once again, like he's so good at getting the best out of mediocre wrestlers like Yujiro to lead them to a mildly spectacular match, which this one was. So good stuff. Then we had Bad Luck Fale and Toru Yano. And I really appreciate New Japan Pro Wrestling to front load Bad Luck Fale matches because this was already his third match of the tournament. And I'm just looking at it when he has his final match. Let me see. His final G1 match. Oh, it's on the final day, actually. Wow. Final day of block action against Jonah. Not that much of a front load then. But yeah, this one was about Toru Yano trying to get a countout win. And they've been, I think there already have been 3 countouts in the tournament at this point. So Toru Yano sat on the outside on a chair. Bad Luck Fale sat inside the ring on a chair. And they just looked at one another. And I really thought that the visual of Bad Luck Fale just sitting there and having this dull look on his face was pretty fun. I think I need to screenshot that. Toru Yano then got back into the ring with an 18 count. They did some stuff, brought back and forth on the outside. Then inside got the Fale got the win with the schoolboy. This was everything that you'd expect from it. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, it sucked. I don't think that's breaking news, but, you know, they avoided some tropes, I guess. I mean, you know, you had the water, you know, did they...
What do you mean they avoided some tropes? Toru Yano tried to get under the ring. They had all the tropes that they always have.
That's true. Did he pull the tape out?
I don't think that he did it. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So they avoided some stuff, at least. But it was, like you said, it's everything you expected. You already know. I don't think there's many people that actually would like this. But maybe if you are one of the few in the crowd, you may enjoy this if you're into this. But for everyone else, this sucked, and I think we all do that. So I give it another 0 rating, much like Kenta and Evil. But that one, I may have been at least, I could have been bumped up to a 1 or a 2 if Kenta had won, but on principle, I had to knock it down to a 0. This is just an all 0. There's no matter who had won, what the finish was, it's still a 0. You cannot polish this turd that they've brought us once again for some reason.
Polish the trophy, Dylan, for Hiroki Goto and Aaron Henare, though. 17 minutes, co-main event of this show in Currican Hall. My opinion, clearly the best match of the night. The G1 clearly stands for Hiroki Goto, even though he has 2 wins now and is clearly losing his next 2 to 3 matches at least. But this one here, he got a big victory over Henare. And I think that Henare really showed that he should have been in the tournament at least last year or 2 years ago because the guy is so polished. His entire offensive approach is so well-rounded. He has the power moves that lets him throw around even a guy like Hiroki Goto. He has incredible vicious strikes. I mean, this chest kick that he threw at Goto was so loud and so hard. Then he even used the Justice knee because Yuji Nagata was on commentary shouting him out here. Love his approach in general, not only like the big power moves or the big power throws, but also the big power submission. We talked about the Ultima on our last show already. His full Nelson looks vicious. I mean, this is such an easy move, but you can tell a great story around this move, and they did in this match as well, with Goto escaping from it. And Goto also needed to pull out all the stops because he needed to use the Yoshigoroshi, needed to use the GTR in reverse and the regular version, the one-man Shoto, used the GIW. So Goto had to really work hard to beat Hinari because Hinari is positioned to be like this underboss of the United Empire that Bad Luck Fale was supposed to portray in the Bullet Club. So yes, in general, this was very, very good.
Yeah, I like this match. I feel like all of Hinari's matches so far have been good. And each one has been like a little bit better than the last.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I like that. Like all of them are somewhat on the same level. Nothing that I would say, you know, say like really like wow, you know, anything like that, but all good, and that's good. Like I like to say, I like his moveset, I like his style in the ring, you know, even, and I like how he mixes up different things. You know, you have the power stuff there, you mentioned some of the submission game, but even, you know, earlier in the match he went into like a MMA style mount, going with the forearms, and that led to an armbar, or a heel hook rather, instead of an armbar. But like
that was interesting too, because that's how he lost this match to Zach.
Yeah, you know, so I like seeing that little progression from Hinari. He's a good worker. Again, I feel like, you know, he's very good. And Goto, obviously, is very good as well. You know, you expect quality from him. And I like what they put together here. This is a very good match. Again, it's what you would want to see. And hopefully we can see more. Like I said, I like to see that one big, big, memorable match from Hinari. Mm-hmm. But right now, what he's doing is a very good and a fine role that he's in as well. And like you said, ultimately, everybody knows he's not the main guy. So for that, he's performing not just good, but very admirably in his role as well. So I definitely enjoy him whenever he's on the screen. And, you know, he worked very well with Goto, as you would expect, a stylistic, you know, positive match, in my opinion, on paper. And they used it to the fullest of their extent. So a very good match here. What did they have on Cage Match? Oh wait, no review yet.
No review. Just that.
yeah, that's right. So it's gonna be interesting to see what the people think of this. But I thought it was very good. I'm with you for sure.
I would rate this as an 8 out of 10 match.
Yeah, you could go there. Like a 7 for me might be there, but maybe a 7.5 if you want to be cool about it. And Goto's had a very good tournament as well. like you said, he's probably gonna lose a lot. Going forward, Hinari doesn't seem to be fit in terms of a booking plan, but Goto, he's wrestling on the last day. I said he would be alive on the last day, and I think they're continuing that run right now. But like you said, it's going to come sometime very soon, and probably starting the next match, which he's going to have to drop some falls to even things out some. So still enjoy it while it lasts for us Goto fans. And I am enjoying it right now. I like what they're doing, and hopefully we have many great matches to come, regardless of victory or defeat.
Hinari has Evil and Kenta as his last two matches, so maybe with Kenta he could have a good match, but not with Evil. But he still has Tetsuya Naito on August 8th, so I would circle that for a great match that he could have in this tournament.
Like I said, each match has been a little bit better than the last, I would say, you know, going forward. So I think that if they could, you know, if he could keep building upon that, that's a sign of somebody that I really will enjoy watching as well. So hopefully he keeps that up and can have that big match versus Naito at some point.
In comparison to this match, Hiroki Goto and Aaron Hinari, what did you think about Tama Tonga and Tomohiro Ishii, the main event of the show?
I thought it was about as good as it could have been, I would say. I really love Ishii, obviously. Tonga, you know, he's good, like good babyface. I enjoy watching him more. You look at it on paper, I think I was probably more into the Hinari and Goto match, to be honest. But this was a good main event as well. You know, like I said, probably as good as you're going to get for a Tonga match. And what would you expect with Ishii in there? He continues to be on a great run despite his limited block. I think I've been very impressed with him, as I always am, as I would never doubt anyway. But I thought they had a good match here. You saw a lot of big moves from Tonga. They put a lot on there where, you know, they ended up, he got a lot of his moves. He, you know, he hit that big, the rolling fireman's carry deal. The Supreme Flow he got.
Yes.
You know, we saw the gun stun attempt, but Ishii caught it and, like, turned it into a backdrop.
Which that was one of really the greatest counters to a cutter I've seen in years.
And it's... Tonga deserves credit too because he had to really like put his ass into it, so yes. to speak. You know, he couldn't just like do it. He had to like because he bounced off the ropes to like dove at him instead of just a normal, you know, diamond cutter setup. It's like he had to fly across the ring to him, and then Ishii just used his own momentum into the backdrop. So I give those props to Tonga as much as Ishii, but it was a very good spot going in there. We see a lot of these big moments as well, up and down in a lot of these matches. So that's really good. But they did do some of that stuff that I don't like, like the countering upon counters that Tonga seems to have adopted, mm-hmm. and he's done before with Jay White. So I definitely think that was something I never enjoy that, no matter who does it, and I'm not giving Tonga a pass either for it. But, you know, a good match overall. This to me didn't feel super special, to be if no. we're being perfectly honest, but it was a good match overall.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I thought that... It was interesting that they did this progression throughout the match where it got harder and tougher as the match progressed. And you could see it with them first chopping each other in the corner. And later on, it went to going to the headbutts where Ishii brought out this incredible headbutt where he basically put his skull against Tama Tonga's chin. That looked great. Yes, the dancing wasn't that great, but the overall story of it, of projecting Tama Tonga to be a tough guy on a similar level as Tomohiro Ishii, I thought was a good way to go. And it was interesting to see Tama Tonga still maintaining the babyface position against Ishii in this match, even though the story was clearly laid out to be two tough guys facing each other. So, yeah, nothing special, I agree, but still good. So yeah, this basically completes the two G1 shows, day 6 and 7. And we are approaching the halfway point of the tournament next weekend in Aichi, double shot once again from the Dolphins Arena. So at this point, after 7 days of action, Dylan, what do you say about this tournament so far?
Much like the end of the last show, I've enjoyed it. I think what you said at the start, you liked both of the shows. I agree. I like both of the shows as well. Mm-hmm. I tried to trick you a little bit. I sounded confused. You said that. You'll believe anything I make up right now, Stricker. But no.
Standing firm here.
Yes, exactly. But no, I actually agree with you. Like, I've liked both shows very much. You know, again, I don't think, you know, the Finlay and Juice match, that was a top-tier match to me. The other ones, we had a lot of good in there. Like, even the matches that weren't super great, like the Ospreay and the Yujiro, I thought they were above expectations. And I think Yujiro's putting in more effort. We've seen it in both of the last two matches. I think that's what you want to see. Chase, again, not a great worker by any stretch, but still, he's putting in a lot of effort, and it makes these matches easier to watch overall, you know, especially when they're undercard stuff. You know, the only negative parts, obviously, are like the evil and the Yano, the goofy stuff, which I'm never going to like, but... Everything else was at least good, and you had some standout performances. You had some stuff like the Hanari Goto was really good. The Tonga and Ishii, like you said, they gave Tonga a little bit of tough guy respect, and who better to do that than against the Stone Pitbull, of course. But they're telling stories. We're still the way the tournament's built right now. If there is one criticism that I could say is we're 7 nights in, and there's very few people that I feel like we're even in range of seeing their overall story, just because it's like, oh, one match for a lot of guys, maybe mm-hmm. two for some others. So we're still, like, I can see why that might, we were talking up there about some people saying it might have dragged a little.
Yeah,
I can see why it might.
Give a shout out here, just wrapping up the point. I saw Jamie O'D of Dramatic DDT and Mike Sebavivi of Wrestling Observer talk about that on Twitter, that this drawn-out schedule can be a bit tiring because the tournament isn't as stacked as it was in years past. And I can see that, as you said, there is the stories that you really need to put it all together and follow along with the entire tournament. The exact quote that Jamie said, the drawn out schedule of the G1 isn't working for me this year. The block matches are all too far apart for my liking. And let's see, Semper Vivi basically agreed to that. He thinks he'll need a truly lauded G1.
Well, that's different than what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I think the blocks are fine how they are. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, I think that so far it's like one match in, seven nights in. Who knows where somebody's going? Like at the end of the tournament, we have no real clear cut view to the finish line. We're still one or two matches in for these guys. So who's to say? Like I said, Goto, two wins, but we all expect him to lose. Naito, two losses, we all expect him to win.
But I mean, that is very clear that you can project already.
Yeah, exactly. But for everybody else, it's like one match apiece for a lot of these dudes. So I can understand why it's like half the tournament you have one match a week into it. And so normally you have guys a week in, like 7 nights in, you'll have 3, 4, 5 matches. At least 3 and maybe 4. By the 7th night. So I can see why that might be a little thing. It's taking a little longer to get there. But remember, there's also less matches overall. So yes. you can project some things. For some guys, like I said, the two wins can really tell a story in and of itself, or the two losses early on. But, that's the only thing, and it's not even really a negative for me, but I can see why you might want, if you're just used to the old format, you might want to see some more vision coming in. And we're going to get that, people are going to have more matches going forward. And there are spots like Kenta, he's going to be gone for like a week or something, like after this match and finally return at the end. Filthy Tom, it took him six, seven shows to get in here. And it's going to be interesting to see how things go going forward. But from a pure fan perspective, I like what we saw so far. I've pretty much enjoyed this tournament throughout. I think they've done a good job with a lot of guys telling stories. You've seen a lot of good matches and definitely a lot of high effort from the wrestlers in question, even from top to bottom, like pretty much everybody in the tournament, from the top guy to the bottom guy. I think we've seen a lot of good effort, some new matches, some fresh matchups. I think it's been all good so far. I like what we've seen a lot.
And while I like a stacked show that can be, of course, very good to follow along. I really also like shows where I can zone out, like I did with the Toru Yano versus Bad Luck Fale match. So that makes this tournament, I think, really easy to follow and easy to watch. And as you said, I think you really need to wait a little bit and let this all play out right now, to the point where we can really say who are the favorites and then get your full attention to the end of this tournament. But even so far, I agree with you. We've seen some really great matches and sometimes not even the main event matches. We've talked about the Kenta and Zack Sabre match that was extremely good. And this time it was the main event match with Juice Robinson and David Finlay. So I think there is a lot to hold on to in this tournament. And I mean, if you dive into it and if you only watch the tournament matches, I think you should be good.
Yeah, that's another point. These shows are 4 matches in so far. We're about to take a jump up soon where we're going to start seeing some 5-match shows going forward as well. So we're going to have some more matches and they're going to try and even things out and like catch up a little bit when they have the extra matches. Like each night I'll have two A block matches and then one of each and then 2 B block matches and one of each, so on and so forth. So we're going to see that coming forward where things catch up a little bit as well. But it's going to be interesting to see how that is going to change some things, because we're right now it's been all 4-match shows throughout, and now we're going to take a jump up soon with the 5-match shows.
Yeah, we got some matches coming up, I think, that after this coming weekend we can say in which direction it will go for some of the guys, because we have Tanahashi versus Zack Sabre and Naito versus Evil. So that will probably be some of the deciding matches in each block. And that's G1 Climax so far. Dylan, just when we came off our last show, the news broke that Kaito Ishida had split from Dragon Gate at a very weird timing, too, that he had left Dragon Gate on July 24th. So not even at the end of a month or anything like that, but like right before the biggest show of the year, where you'd think, okay, he's still wrestling on Kobe World on July 30 and 31st, and then he's gone. But no, he left before these two big shows. And of course, people online started to think about where he might go, and some already brought up New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I think that could be a viable option. And it's certainly the way he went out of Dragon Gate sounds like what New Japan had done before with other wrestlers they took. For example, Shingo Takagi, Taichi Ishimori from Noah. They let their contracts run out and went to New Japan. But more so, I said it on Twitter as well, in the last couple of months, we really haven't seen the old Kaito Ishida that had this great match series with Keisuke Okuda in late 2020. He didn't really seem like he was still there with his head. He didn't seem motivated. This gold class group after the RED split wasn't doing it for him. He wasn't the main focus of that. He was an afterthought, basically. So I totally get why he wanted to move on and why he wants to do something new. That being said, if he really is still motivated to continue wrestling, but this guy is just so young and he has such a great perspective that I would really think it would be a mistake to not go on.
I think he'll keep wrestling. If you look at the way they announced it on the Dragon Gate page, the way they said it was, it wasn't like a contract expired. It was more like, they announced it here. I'm reading it right now. Effective July 24th, Kaito Ishida has made the decision to leave Dragon Gate. Attempts to accommodate his request were made, but ultimately he held by this desire, and we respect that. Mm-hmm. So it appears that there was something going on that we're not privy to. Some sort of request that he made, I don't know. I know that there was a recent, this episode like literally just came out, this Open the Voice Gate show, a shout out to them with Case Lowe, Mike Spears, those guys, they did a big show about all of that. I know they had like Jay on for some kind of interview previewing Kobe World as well, so I'm sure there's some information on that show. I haven't got to listen to it yet, but I'm sure they have, if there's any scoops to be had, they probably have it. So
yeah, I saw this tweet from Open the Voice Gate from June 16 of last year. There they already said there is a rumor circulating that Kaito Ishida will be leaving Dragon Gate. Once we can get anything concrete, we'll sure to share the information here. Case low.
Well, I guess it's concrete now.
Yes.
It took over a year, but like I said, we don't really know why that is. What was it that he wanted so much that they tried to accommodate, but he stood by it? Like that's all very vague, you know, at the end of the day. Nobody knows what that means, really. Where he can go in the future? Yeah, you know, New Japan, that would be interesting. I think if he were going there, my only kind of qualm about that is that this is a very weird time for that to happen in the middle of the, not just because of Dragon Gate, but in the middle of the G1 where the juniors, they have no presence at all. It's not like you can announce them. Maybe if he shows up at the end, you know, the final night of the G1, you know, the finals, maybe we could see that. But otherwise, it just seems like a very strange time overall for something like that they would want. You know, like Shingo came right before the Wrestle Kingdom. You know, it made perfect sense the time he came in November or whatever. So, like, this is a little bit more odd. A lot of people think maybe he could go to Great, which, you know, that could be really cool if they wanted to do that.
Yes.
Doesn't sound like you're convinced based on your reaction.
I just would think that, I don't know.
Why
Dragon Gate to go exactly, there? Why leave Dragon Gate for Great? I mean, it could be just the fact that he wasn't happy in Dragon Gate anymore and he just wanted to do something else. And maybe he could have Great as a base to even work with New Japan Pro Wrestling, for example. Yeah, but I don't see like Great would be a promotion that I would leave my home for where I started wrestling. I mean, Ryuichi Kawakami did it, but we're talking about Big Japan and not about Dragon Gate.
That's true. Dragon Gate is a lot more stable, like, if you want to go there. But like I said, we don't know. It's clear, like I said, this was not about wrestling. Like, or you know, at the end of the day, this was something going on behind the scenes that, you know, was not able to be worked out for whatever reason.
Right.
And like I said, I have no clue what that could be. But all I can say about him is, like, he's a heck of a talent. I really like him. I think he'd be a great junior heavyweight wherever he went. You know, if he was in New Japan, he'd add something for sure. And that, you know, the problem with New Japan is if you go there, I mean, like, there's no hope for you, no matter who you are, like what kind of talent you are. The juniors have no upward mobility, like no matter how great you are, like just like a Desperado, an amazing talent, but they don't use him right. And it's hard to really become anything more than you are when you're in that situation. And then there's always the time where the heavyweights are going to get more of a focus for essentially, you know, at least a quarter of the year when the tag league and the G1, the juniors are on the bench. Then it's like you have no, it's not like Dragon Gate where you're always in rotation, or even in NOAH where you're, you know, you're pretty much always in rotation outside of the N1, you know, those few weeks. So it's like the juniors, you're in a really tough spot when you're in a New Japan Junior division. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. Who would he have friends with? Who would he know well? You know, because we've seen a lot of departures over Dragon Gate, you know, talking back to Shingo, you know, Shima, when he left, you know, Strong Hearts. Who was he tight with those guys? And I think that's why people will bring up Great, because those guys were there and were in Dragon Gate.
Yes, that's true. Then again, it would completely fit with what Kidani and Obari recently brought up, that New Japan needs more younger talent. He's 26 years old. So that would be someone that would definitely fit, not only from the age standpoint, but also from the look side. So he's much more like an idol type of wrestler than Phantasmo or Yujiro Takahashi.
yes. That's not a hot take at all. But a very accurate assessment from Striga right now, ladies and gentlemen, the idol wrestler respector right now of everyone. But I agree with that, and I think he's a great stylistic choice as well. Like, you know, obviously his nickname, Kick Boy, like he's a very kick-based wrestler. I think he brought something to Dragon Gate. I think he's going to be missed. Like you said, he hasn't been a main featured guy in the past year, you know, ever since, you know, they had the whole deal with everything going on. After he left Red, I think that was, you know, he hasn't been able to really go to those heights that he was at again. But it feels like he's a guy anywhere that would be a great prospect and just a great guy to have. So wherever he goes, I think he'll have a great run. He'd fit in pretty much any company where he wants to go. It just depends on if they want him, what his ideas are. Why did he leave Dragon Gate? What was the reason behind it? You know, only he knows that. So if whatever the reasons are, I wish him well, because he's a talented young guy, you know, great talent, great look, like you said. He's got everything it takes to be a top-level junior in any company, whether it was in New Japan, NOAH, you know, Great. He could be one of the top stars, really, there. Like, if you think about it, if that's something that he really desires, maybe that's what it was. He just felt like he should be a main eventer for some reason, and he wants to be that. We don't know at the end of the day. So that would be more like a Great or a DDT. He could jump in and be a main event guy in those promotions. And I think the other ones, he's a junior heavyweight through and through, which, you know, you still have a role, you still have solid work. Maybe that's what he's looking for. We don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see. And maybe we'll get a better explanation on this in the future, or at least we can have dots to connect to draw our conclusions wherever he chooses to go. But I do think he will. I don't think he's going to leave wrestling for good. I feel like he's going to stay. And it feels like with how they had made that announcement, it feels like there was something they just couldn't come together on, and that made him unhappy. And he chose to leave, which is completely within his rights. And I wish him well for it.
Yes, good closing words on that. As you said, extensive preview of Kobe World on Open the Voice Gate. Let's just quickly go through the cards that we have. First day of that is July 30. Ultimo Dragon's 35th anniversary starts with a Dragon Scramble Battle Royal. The winner of that faces the Open the Brave Gate champion on the second night. It's Genki Horiguchi, Sachi Yoko Boy, Mondai Ryu, Punch Tominaga, UT, Super Shenlong 3, Ishin Ihashi, Ryo Fuda, SB Kento, and Hoho Loon. Everybody that doesn't have another match on this card. Then we go to the opening, KZ, Big Boss Shimizu, and Strong Machine J against Kota Minura, Naoki Doi, and Minorita. Kenichiro Arai, Gurukun Mask, and the Bodyguard face Takashi Yoshida, Benkei, and Madoka Kikuta. Open the Brave Gate, title Dragon Dire defense against Hio. Kagetora 20th anniversary match. Kagetora teams with Jinsei Shinsaki and Taro Nohashi. Remember, Kagetora had been in Michinoku Pro after the Toriumon X. Yes, I think it was. Where he was folded, he went to Michinoku Pro, so he teams with them against Don Fuji, Shuji Kondo, and Turo Owashi. Should be a fun match. Dragon Kid 25th anniversary match. Dragon Kid and Masato Tanaka team against Yamato and BB Hulk. Yeah, that is a match, Dylan. Remember, Dragon Kid tried to be a referee in FMW, so teaming with Masato Tanaka should bring back some memories here.
I remember. I know that. Just like Shawn Michaels was a referee in FMW, he followed in his footsteps as well. I became wow. a and became a better wrestler than him as he came through. But yeah, you know, this is just a fun random match here.
Yeah, but Yamato and BB Hulk teaming once again here.
Yeah, that's true. The BB Hulk has been a heel forever, and now bringing it back with Yamato.
Resurrection Boso 10 match series. GM Ryo Saito announced that Konomama Ichikawa will once again have a match series against unnamed opponents. So it's Ichikawa versus X. Who is X going to be?
Great Muda.
I'm going with Buff Bagwell.
That's not going to happen. You're being silly right now. Like I said, you're trying to put over these con artists right now, Stringer, and we don't need that on
the
show.
You put over Kenta as well.
Kenta's a worker. He didn't con anybody. He tells you. He says, look, you pay the money, you get the book. If you pay the money, you get the book. That's not a con to me. That's just a great worker. But no, you know, this is something... This is a classic Dragon Gate deal. We've seen this a bunch of times where, you know, Stalker Ishikawa or Konomama or whatever you want to call him, like, we'll have these 10-match series. It'll be a legend, probably, and it'll be a very short match just for funsies and goofiness. And, you know, he's had a lot of these over his career. What's your favorite Stalker Ishikawa series squash match?
Against Yoshihiro Takayama.
That was awesome. I will give you that.
Yes. So it should be along that lines. Maybe it could be Yuji Hino or something.
Yeah, that would fit. Or a big guy that would beat him down. My favorite was him versus Akira Hokuto.
Oh, yes, that was great too. Shigusa Nagayo.
Right. You know, we've seen it many times. You know, it'll be interesting. I don't know. Like, the thing is, like, this feels a little old hat. For 2022, but it gives them something to do. How are they going to top the ones from before? It's not really the same at this point with a lot of the legends and stuff like that. Who is the class and the crop they're going to draw from? I mean, maybe they'll pull out something crazy and it'll be a lot of fun. But you know, overall, it just feels like something that, you know, this is on a Kobe World show. It'll be interesting at the end of the day. It'll be a fun little match. Yeah, fun little match overall.
Open the Triangle Gate. Nosawa, Rongai, Eita, and Kotaro Suzuki defend against Masaki, Mochizuki, Susumu, Mochizuki, and Mochizuki Jr., Masaki's son. They are now M3K, and they've debuted this guy as not Mochizuki's son, but then Mochizuki took the mic and said, this is not, I think they named him Edo or something. I think Edo was his last name they named him. And they said, that's not his real name. He, in reality, is my son. And that got a great reaction from the Currican Hall crowd. So they are now teaming. They are back at the, basically at the M2K shtick that they used almost 20 years ago to this point. And they are just a fun unit now. They get going against Los Perros de Mal de Japón. And another match with a Mexican influx is Ultima Dragon's 35th anniversary match, where he faces none other, Dylan, than El Hijo del Santo.
Santito, yes, an all-time legend. I will say in the six-man match, we have to remember that Akanda is the special referee. A secret referee, much like Dragon Kid and Shawn Michaels in FMW. Akanda is now following in their footsteps here. And what, you know... Going through that, I really like the M3K unit. I think that's a cool way to debut Mochizuki Jr. and all that. I think it's a very nice thing. Ultimo Dragons match, you know, Io Del Santo, one of the best luchadors of all time. Shout out to Jack Shares Graps on Twitter. He's posting a bunch of Io Del Santo stuff right now recently. We went through all of the rings together. That was a journey me and him went on together throughout. And now he's doing Io Del Santo stuff, which I completely approve of because he has a lot of great matches. Legitimately one of the best in-ring performers, not just a luchador, but anywhere, in my opinion. He's very old now, so this will not be a very good match in all likelihood. But still, it's going to be fun. And, you know, Io Del Santo, he will beat Ultimo Dragon in his own 35th anniversary match, I expect.
Then we got the Open the Twin Gate title, Diamante and Shun Skywalker defend against Jackie Funky Kamai and Jason Lee, semi-main event of the show. This has all the potential to be the show stealer.
Yeah, I'm completely down with this match. I think that Shun and Diamante, great tag team. Shun especially, I think, has been one of the best in terms of not just a wrestler, but a character in wrestling. Jason, back from his injury that kind of cut his run short in the King of Gate. And JFK is definitely one of the, you know, the bright young talents of Dragon Gate. Somebody that everybody likes, got a ton of personality and a ton of things to like about him. Yeah, this could be a really great match and should get a lot of time. You know, like I said, this card overall, it's not heavy on great matches, but this is really where you're going to get to see the stuff shine, I think, the last two.
So final match of the card is the opening the Dreamgate title match, Kai defends against Yuki Yoshioka. So this came all together with this convoluted three-way match they did a couple of weeks ago with Yuki Yoshioka and Kota Minoura, as well as Shuji Kondo. Kota Minoura scored both falls, eliminating both Kondo and Yoshioka. And then he chose the second night of Kobe World to face the champion. So Yuki Yoshioka, in a losing effort, but of course he won King of Gate, he now received the first shot at Kai. And what do you think? I expect Yuki Yoshioka to win both main events.
So yeah, I think this sucked. Like the way this build up. And I think the company has reached a, you know, you see Ishida leaving and the way this card has turned out and how things happened with the Dreamgate. And it felt like they were on a really hot run. And now it feels like, you know, suddenly they're a little down, you know, for whatever reason.
They definitely need to do something in the coming up months to maintain their position they received from us in our half-year awards.
Yeah, I think it feels like this does not feel like a super hot, like best of the year type of show, to be honest with you, like these next two shows. And it feels like, and I had so much anticipation coming out of King of Gate. It felt like they were on a great run. They had a lot of cool things set up. But, you know, you look at this card up and down, like I said, a lot of the stuff seems to be built on nostalgia here, mm-hmm. which is a big part of Dragon Gate. But they also have a lot of guys like SPK. He's in this battle royal to open up. You know, like that's a guy who should be a main guy, like to me. Someone like Ben K, we talked about him,
yes.
you know, in the past, you know, like just totally in the mud at the moment.
Shimizu, you know, like, working the opener as well.
Yeah, Shimizu, he's another guy that, you know, you want to see a lot more of. He's in the six-man tag there. You know, even KZ in that same six-man match. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, this card is not screaming like show of the year or biggest show of the year for Dragon Gate that you would expect. And they're always a great company when it comes to emotional moments and spectacles and things like that. And I'm not really feeling that vibe here. And on paper, Kai versus Yoshioka, that's an awesome match.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that. But I'm not really I'm not hyped up for this one just because we know that what's coming up in the next night. And I also think, to me, Yoshioka should have been the second night guy. Like this should end with him, in my opinion, and that should be his crowning moment. Like, I mean, Minoru's cool and all, but like to me, Yoshioka is the guy. Like you've given him King of Gate. Like this is the guy, and you had a great run with Dragon Daya, and now you're muddling you're muddying the waters so much with this title. The way they did it was really goofy. There was stuff like Kondo on the way there as well. It's like, this really feels really muddled and not good, and I'm not very happy with how everything has played out with the Kobe World. But I do think as a match, this will be very, very high quality. These two are both great workers. And again, I think it's going to be up to the last two matches. You know, and like I said, the Twin Gates, I think I like that match. Like, I like all of them involved. I do think that, like, Jackie and Jason as tag champions, I don't know, you know, at the end of the day. Like, Shun and Diamante having such a good run right now, it's hard for me to really see that title change happening. Maybe it will, but, you know, the main event to me is going to have to carry this card, in my opinion, with how it's played out. Will there be a title change, or will Minoura be the one at the end of the day? Like, you know, it depends.
I can see the Twin Gate changing, because never ever is the Twin Gate the main event belt. So they could give it to Jackie and to Jason, and it would also conclude a half-year-long storyline with Jason Lee and Shun Skywalker, and would bring Jason Lee back to where he once was when he was teaming with Kota Minoura. So I can see that. But ultimately, I agree with you that this card is not really it for a Kobe world, but a lot of nostalgia, definitely. That is what they are banking on this year, at least for the first show. The second show, one day later, only has three matches right now that are up in the air because of the champions having to defend first. So open the Brave Gate, Dragon Dire, or Hio, defend against the Dragon Scramble winner. Open the Triangle Gate is either Los Perros or M3K against Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Benkei, as well as Natural Vibes, KZ, Big Boss Shimizu, and Strong Machine J in a three-way. And open the Dream Gate, of course, Kai or Yuki Yoshioka against Kota Minura. And yes, that's the cards.
Yeah, like I said, I wish that I could say I was a lot more excited about it. And maybe they'll over-deliver. You know, we have some big matches on there. But, you know, maybe we'll see that, you know, like that Dragon Dyad Hio match. That'll really step up. Hio has shown a lot of great improvements over the year. I think that's a worthy reward to be in this opening, this opening match here, the Brave Gate title match. I think that's cool. But overall, I do think that the shows could have been built to a lot better. I think they've really fumbled the bag a little bit when it comes to... They had everything going so well that it's tough when it doesn't quite come together at the goal line. But the in-ring performances and whatever they put together for night two, it's still possible these come away as huge shows. And, you know, maybe that Yoshioka deal, if he does win, that'll be a hugely emotional moment at the end of the day. And I would like to see that. And hopefully the tag match can bring something big out. You know, you expect it to be good. And, you know, hopefully we see big things going forward for everything in the company. And they have a clear path. Because historically, Kobe World, that's where you set things in motion forward with guys in the past. And you would like to see that, you know, whether it was for the Benkei a few years ago or even Yamato when he won the title. You know, like they set things in motion for the rest of the year at Kobe World. And I think that we're going to see that here one way or the other, at least.
Yes. So a few more quick notes on some other companies. We talked about Great with the Kaito Ishida topic. They announced their tournament for the new championship, the G-Infinity Championship, and I was confused because I thought that they had announced Kento Miyahara for that tournament.
You didn't think they did, in fact.
Yeah, I was pretty much confused about that. So I read the tweet again, and the tweet only said that there will be a tournament, and Kento Miyahara will be in action. So that are basically okay. Two separate things that they said, but it can be misunderstood, I think.
So we jumped the gun a little bit.
Yeah, I was confused about that. But still, though, we got a tournament, but only like it's a very mini tournament with only semifinals and finals happening. Semifinals on August 20 in Osaka are Ryuichi Kawakami and Kazuma Sakamoto of Bulk Orchestra against 60 Seconds, Jun Tonshu and Keiichi Sato. And Strong Hearts, Shima and Tiok against Kasayashi and Takanori Ito. And the winners facing in Kurikan August 24th. So I would say everything is set for Bulk Orchestra to become the first tag champs.
I think a lot of people peg Strong Hearts for this, but you know, when it comes to T-Hawk and Shima, Lindemann obviously already the G-Rex champion, but you know, a mismatched team here. Like T-Hawk and Lindemann are much more known as the team.
Right.
You know, so if it were me, I would go with 60 Seconds, actually. Like, mm-hmm. If it were up to me, they pushed Bulk Orchestra for a good while, but they haven't quite, it feels like they haven't quite reached the levels they were at last year, this year, with Lindemann really dominating the main event scene. I would go with a fresh face with 60 Seconds in. You know, and look, it's a 4-team tournament. Yes. Any of them could win. You know, at the end of the day, it's not like they've, you know, muddied the waters too much. It just depends on where they go, what they see. I think Strong Hearts will not win, though, because, like I said, they're a mismatched team. And you could tell a future story with Tiok and Lindemann going for the titles. I think that would not mean as much if Tiok and Shima have already won the titles. So, but that would also be a very interesting story if they wanted to do that, because then you would have the idea of, you know, is someone going to turn on somebody? Has Lindemann, you know, left them behind, or will they leave him behind? Like, you could do something for that if you want to build up Shima or T-Hawk as a future rival to Lindemann or a challenger into a big time story. You know, like sure. I said, Bulk Orchestra, they've been pushed a lot last year and been a presence on this year's show, but I don't think they've reached as high as they were before. Like I said, 60 Seconds, new faction. I love them as talents. I think that they're of the teams, they're the ones that I would want to win as well. But, you know, you could go to either way. Who was the fourth team?
Kasayashi and Takanori Ito.
Yeah, you know, the veteran and, you know, like a mentor, a mentee type of relationship. You know, that's a fun team to have. Out of all of them, they're the ones I'd be the surprised by, but I don't think you can write them out. Hayashi's really been a background player in great, always working the opening matches, second match, that type of thing. But Ito's always been pushed as a main guy. Like, he's main evented the big shows when it comes to the New Japan guys. It wasn't Lindemann. He main evented against Sho. He main evented against Nagata. So you might want to give him a bone, because I think that's something he's been missing, because he never wins any of these big matches, unfortunately. So if you want to throw him a bone, this is a good way to start, I would say. So I think you could make a pretty compelling case for any of the four teams overall.
Yeah, the reason that I think Book Orchestra is winning is, like, you could tell a story around, like, Ito, for example, losing in the finals and then having to work hard to eventually reach the point where he can challenge again. Maybe with Soma Watanabe, he really needs something as well. So down the line, they could beat Book Orchestra and then look much better than they are right now.
Yeah, Soma's got nothing lately. So I wish they would do something with him. That kid's a really talented guy. So I would hope that they have something in mind for him one way or the other. But, you know, right now these are the four teams they chose, and I can see why for all of them. You could do anything with these teams, pretty much, I would say. So it's going to be interesting. I think the talent level's high in all four teams. Like, even though it's just a three-match tournament, it should be good. So I'm interested in seeing the matches. And they have a lot of big shows coming up in September, too. You know, they're pretty much running a full month of shows every week with great. So that's going to be really cool to see.
Definitely. So that's great. Another tournament coming to a conclusion in August 14, to be precise, is the Tokyo Princess Cup. And right now we're at the stages that the quarterfinals are happening at the coming weekend, with Mio Watanabe versus Shoko Nakajima, Rika Tatsumi versus Suzume, Nao Kakuta versus Mio Yamashita, and Yuka Sakazaki versus Hikari Noah. The tournament has been fine so far, I would say. Still, the best match in the tournament, in my opinion, was Rika Tatsumi versus Yuki Kamifuku, and the best match of this entire stretch actually was not a tournament match, but a tag match from last Saturday with Mio Watanabe and Rika Tatsumi against Shoko Nakajima and Yuka Sakazaki. Was the semi-main of that show. Really liked that match. Who do you have winning?
You know, I think you could go a lot of different directions with the tournament. This year kind of got thrown into flux with, you know, Maki Ito not being there. You know, a lot of the matches early on have been more so, you know, and then you had the thing with Mizuki, you know, Shoko advancing in that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like a lot of things have been kind of flipped on their heads. It felt like, I thought Mizuki could have been a great choice, because we saw, you know, Sakazaki get the title match at Cyber Fight Fest, and that seems like a very natural challenger. But now she's out. Yamashita is winning, and she's going to be, as we're recording, she's going to be on AEW tonight, right? Challenging for their title, so that's an interesting deal there. You know, but up and down, when you look at how things have played out, it's really tough right now, you know, to get it, because like I said, Mizuki was really who I was thinking before, so it's going to be interesting how that all works out at the end of the day. And, you know, Tatsumi just got a title shot. I think, you know, Watanabe, if they're going, one of my main criticisms of this company is how there's really not a lot of upward mobility for a lot of the, you know, mid-card, undercard talent, except for Arai, who's really got a rocket ship behind her, and, you know, perhaps Juria will have that as well, but that's more for non-wrestling reasons why they want to build them up so much. Watanabe, if you want to go with a new talent, you would want it to be her. I would like to see that. You know, that would be what I would want to do.
Yes, I would do that as well.
Yeah, but it's very up in the air right now, you know, at the end of the day. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Tournament's been okay. Like, I don't think there's really been any, you know, classic matches or anything, but there's been nothing terrible or anything. It's always been pretty enjoyable to watch, you know, up and down. So you see some interesting matches so far, and a lot of them, we're getting to the interesting part of the tournament now that we've gotten through a lot of the like super undercard people that have gotten bounced so far. So we're going to get some more interesting matches in the future, and we're going to see some big wins for some people. So I'm going to peg it. Miyu Watanabe will be the win.
I love that. So that's TJPW. Another big win, Dylan, came for Yoshiki Inamura. He defeated Fuminori Abe to win Block B of 01's 22nd Midsummer Festival, the Fire Festival. He is now facing the winner of Block A on July 31st in Kirken Hall for the final day of Fire Festival action this year. And the opponent, still not clear, will be clear after July 30th only. It can be either Chris Weiss or Shu Asakawa. Everybody else is out of contention because they have still matches left. I would love to see Shu Asakawa, but I don't think that they will do a Fire Festival final with two outsiders. So I'll guess Yoshiki Inamura is winning the tournament against Chris Weiss in the finals.
Yeah, that's the exact reason I would say as well that you would have Weiss win. I really think, I've always said Asakawa was very underrated. I think he's a guy that deserves a lot of love. Even in 2AW, he was never pegged. Like, much like Inaba in Wrestle 1, I don't think he ever got the love he deserved for being a great talent. But you, like you said, Inamura into the finals. Obviously, Noah has a lot more, you know, cachet than it comes to, you know, when it comes to a bigger promotion than a 2AW. So it makes sense you would go there. Inamura, awesome. Love it that he's in the final. I think that Chris Weiss has never won this tournament before. And I think that this might be his time to win, actually. I think they would want to have a 0-1 guy, especially right now with the company in such dire straits in so many ways. I think they would want to have a feel-good rallying cry for the company moment. So I'll go with Weiss to win right now.
Yes. Would definitely be interesting for Yoshiki Inamura to go after the 0-1 world title, because that's something that they've done in the past with Sugiura holding the title as well. But I can also go with Chris Weiss. So we've seen Hartley Jackson win the tournament before, so they've done it. And Weiss is definitely one of those that is really good, performs very on a very high level for 0-1 standards. So like the guy and would love it for him.
And it should be a big win for the company overall.
And then just one more piece of good news here, Dylan. After he broke his left leg, basically in February in the Ikitosen Strong Climb, Yuya Aoki now announced his return to action at the August 7 Kuroken Hall show for Big Japan Pro Wrestling. And I can't wait for Aoki to be back, because his initial run was very promising. He upgraded from junior heavyweight to heavyweight. Didn't get a strong run there yet. And I don't know if I'm hopeful that he'll ever be a main focused guy, but definitely on the wrestling side, the guy is very strong. So I'm happy he's back.
Really good performer. Can't wait to see what he does now that he's come back. Big Japan, you know, again, another company kind of in a rough patch right now. But, you know, Aoki, he's the type of guy that will add something to every card, every match he's on. You know, he had the injury that was sad, but he's back in wrestling. And that's the best news of all, is that ultimately he came back and was able to get back healthy. And I hope for the best for him. I hope he gets a big run in the future. He can be up there and be, you know, they can build around some of these guys like him, you know, astronauts, obviously, you know, you want to see that happen, but who knows what will happen. Big Japan. It's all speculation at this point when it comes to their booking. We can only speculate, but we hope for the best for the guy, because he's a very talented guy, and hopefully he gets some big runs in Big Japan and maybe do some outsider stuff here and there. So I'd like to see that as well. But very good talent, and very happy to see him back.
Yes. So ending the show with a positive note, on a high note, Dylan, enjoyed this very much. Once again, going through G1 action and some other notes with you. We'll be back after this weekend, after the double shot in Aichi, with the halfway point of the G1 Climax. And so far, I want to say thank you all for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.